For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. There was a confrontation at Oktoberfest this year when Don Spencer, president of the Oklahoma Second Amendment Association, tried to enter the event with a weapon. KRMG's Russell Mills asked him what happened next.
There was a Facebook video posted, I guess, by you. And you have to characterize it as a confrontation that took place as you were trying to enter the Oktoberfest festival here in Tulsa earlier this month. This would have probably been last weekend sometime. Can you explain to me, why you were there? I mean, were you there for a beer and a chicken dance, or were you there to make a point? And then kind of tell us what happened from there.
I was there for a bottle and a bratwurst. That's what I was there for. Okay. OK2A has worked for 3 years. In 2016, the law was changed to clarify that basically public property is always public property, and that a person could carry a handgun while on that public property, even during an event such as this, Oktoberfest. So I was just making my entrance, and of course, they're checking for weapons. And I said, yes, I have one. And so they said they pulled security over there. And there was not a confrontation until Sergeant Witt showed up and he refused to identify himself. He put his hands on me, basically committing battery and shoving me through a direction to where it was not safe to walk because it was blocked. And then he tells me he's doing me a favor but of course he's violating a state statutes. He's violating my constitutional rights, and him and several other either security or police officers there were also involved.
And did they escort you from the premises?
I walked to the edge of the property line there, I guess basically you call it the street, and went from there with that. So
do you need to grab that?
Sorry about that.
That's
no,
okay.
I'm just trying to get the hang up.
All right. So at that point, and you were taking video of this as it was happening. Were you making a conscious effort just to document what was going on? Because you've talked about legal action.
Yes. Well, the fact is, we don't make the effort to go into a place unless there's been previously an established problem. We do not make the effort, and people think you're trying to stir problems. No, we're not trying to stir problems. We're trying to alleviate and get rid of a problem, because anytime you have a municipality, a public trust property, and police officers and security officers violating existing state law, it needs to be put in check.
So can you be specific about the law that you're referring to and how it would apply to Oktoberfest?
Yes. Under Section 1290.22, it's called the Business Owner's Rights. And under Paragraph D, it specifically states, and this was from 2016, it went into law, no person, holder of an event permit, or business entity shall be permitted to establish any policy or rule that has the effect of prohibiting any person from carrying a concealed or unconcealed firearm on the property within the specific exclusion of paragraph 4 of subsection B. And paragraph 4 subsection B has to do with parks. And the River Park Authority obviously is a park because it's right even in its own title. And then let me go ahead and go one step further with you there as soon as I find it on here. This year, the state legislature and Governor Stitt signed into law clarifying the fact that a person that enters a public trust property, that the person is still allowed to carry a concealed handgun, but they'll be allowed to carry it concealed only. And so that goes into effect November 1st. But it's already been law for almost 3 years that a person can carry at this park at an event. And actually, this law was in response to the River Park Authority violating people's rights. So they need to come into compliance, and they're not. So we're going to take legal action to force them into compliance, which includes each individual officer, each individual security officer. It's going to include the city council. It's going to include the River Park Authority Trust. And it's going to include the chief of police if he establishes that they had his authority to make to violate citizens' rights.
And will this be your organization that brings the lawsuit, or you as an individual, or a combination thereof?
It's probably most likely to say a combination thereof. I have not specifically got that sectioned out with the attorney yet. We're mostly just getting to the meat of the situation, but action will be taking place.
Do you have a timeline in mind?
No, I didn't put a timeline on it because we basically have 2 years to do this, but it will take place.
All right, so let's talk a little more broadly about what happens on November 1st. I know that you were key in pushing for this legislation, helping to draft this legislation, getting it, you know, passed. And what are we looking at November 1st? What changes in Oklahoma?
What changes in Oklahoma is that a person that's 21 years of age that can legally purchase a firearm will be able to legally carry that same firearm. And if they're 18 years of age, if they're military, they're still prohibited in carrying in the places that's not currently allowed by law with a person with a license. And so basically they will not be required to obtain a license or permit to carry in the state of Oklahoma, and which brings us in the state residents of Oklahoma up to the other 15 states that have constitutional carry that can carry in Oklahoma. So now Oklahomans will be able to carry in Oklahoma too under the same provision.
What about reciprocity between those states?
Reciprocity between the states, we still highly recommend a person obtain or renew their weapons license from the state of Oklahoma. So they will have reciprocity in 38 other states. Not every other state will recognize Oklahoma's constitutional carry.
What will Oklahoma do? Will we recognize other states' constitutional carry, or will we also require a license for out-of-state residents?
No, we've already been recognizing other states' constitutional carry since 2011. So eight years, residents from those states have been able to carry in Oklahoma with a valid driver's license, and Oklahoma residents have not been able to.
There has been a legal challenge. People are trying to stop this from going into effect on November 1st, trying to get an emergency injunction issued. What's the update on that?
The update on that is the hearing is supposed to be October 30th. We will be there. We are hoping and anticipate that the judge will see it's just a last Hail Mary ditch attempt to stop the will of the people, the will of the legislature, and the will of the governor.
Not giving us a lot of time, holding the hearing on October 30th for a law that goes into effect 2 days later. That could be complicated.
That's just the way the system is. If it was easy, I guess anybody could do it, right?
I guess that's true. So going back to let's talk about this for a second. What kind of response have you had from law enforcement, about this, the constitutional carry question?
Actually, overall, I would say I'm very pleased. We've been contacted by numerous agencies, and we've supplied videos and information on what the new law is and the change will be. And with just small questions and small reservations, and the reservations were mostly based on they just didn't understand or know the full law. So overall, it's been good. And you're always going to have some pushback somewhere. But overall, it's been very good.
Okay, so let's go back to the Oktoberfest thing for a second. Some people are saying, do we really need guns at a place where the primary object is to drink beer and just kind of get crazy?
Well, a person like myself can walk into there and get something besides an adult beverage and consume it plus a good meal, which is exactly what took place at Scissortail Park in Oklahoma City just a few weeks ago when they had the Grand Park opening. They had a band there playing music, They had drinks and they had food. And a person simply walked up, presented your weapons license, just like I did, entered the park with no problem and went right on in. And as you heard, there was no issues as a result of it. And there's no reason why that same thing could not take place in Tulsa or any other place that has these types of events.
Don Spencer, president of the Oklahoma Second Amendment Association. All of us have experienced potholes on Oklahoma roads, but it's a lot worse than we thought. Research analyst Alan Johnson has done a national comparison of U.S. roads, and Oklahoma doesn't look good.
You guys, talking about diving into data, you got your hands on Federal Highway Administration data on all 50 states, correct?
Correct.
And what kind of data was this? What were you looking at? What were you looking for?
So we put together a composite ranking based on three factors, which includes percentage of roads in poor condition, cost per motorist, and percentage of bridges structurally deficient. So based on those three ranking factors, we put together a composite ranking score to rank all 50 states from 1 being the worst all the way to 50th being the best. And we did find Oklahoma to be the second worst when it comes to road infrastructure.
Ouch. Worst in the country. Second worst in the country.
And worst.
And to just to make sure I understand what you're saying, you said in terms of bridges and the state of the roads themselves as far as repair, and then you said cost to drivers.
Yep.
Okay.
Annual costs per motorist due to roads in need of repair. Were the three ranking factors we use.
In other words, when people hit a pothole and have to take the car in to get it fixed, for example.
Right. Yeah, so the what's estimated in the cost per motorist is a national cost of $120 billion in vehicle repairs and operating costs, which shakes out to be an average of $533 per driver in the nation. Oklahoma was on the high end of that at an average cost of $900 per motorist due to roads being in poor condition.
Ouch. All right. So as far as the roads themselves, how was that ranked? How was that determination made?
Yeah. Again, we use we analyze Federal Highway Administration data, which looks at overall road conditions in each state. That includes number, percentage of roads in poor condition, fair condition, and quality conditions.
And does that include city streets, or are we talking about our highway system here?
That includes center lane miles. So that's a figure that they use to calculate number of miles of roads and then evaluating their conditions.
Okay, but what I'm trying to figure out is, does that include, you know, city streets, or are we just talking about, you know, highways and interstates and, you know, state roads that the state would be responsible for maintaining as opposed to roads that the cities would be responsible, or is it both?
It is a combination of roads. That includes rural roads, urban roads, and highway systems.
Okay, so whatever we drive on, it's included.
Yep.
All right, so according to some of the statistics that you sent us, roughly 33%, one out of three Oklahoma roads are in poor condition. And again, this data is from the Federal Highway Administration?
Yes.
It's estimated it costs each and every Oklahoma driver $900. I presume that's annually because of those roads?
Yes, that's an annual cost. Yes.
That 14% of our bridges are structurally deficient. And that 27% of the allocated highway budget is spent on trying to fix some of these problems.
Yep, that's correct. And, you know, ultimately what we see from, you know, with our ranking factors and ranking states based on, you know, from top to bottom being worst for infrastructure, we did notice the top five states when it comes to percent of spending on road repairs spend below the national average of 30% on road repairs. So while Oklahoma at 27% is close to the national average, we do see states like Rhode Island, Mississippi, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania in the top five that have a very low percentage of spending on road repairs, where some of that other budget is allocated towards infrastructure expansion. So what makes it difficult there is if roads are currently in poor condition and then they're expanding into more infrastructure, that's just more infrastructure to be maintaining. And it looks as if those percentage of spending on road repairs not being there, you know, could lead to long-term poor quality roads and poor infrastructure.
And that's interesting because Tulsa experienced this phenomenon, is still experiencing it, because in the, I think it was the 1960s, the city expanded greatly and suddenly had all these roads to build. And so they built them all, but they left the older roads poorly maintained to the point where eventually they got way behind maintaining those roads. They're crumbling. And then when they started fixing those, by the time they got around to that, we saw some of the rural roads start to go bad. And it's just been, we've never caught up. We're still trying to catch up. Is that something that you see reflected in some of these statistics that you got from FHA?
Yeah. And I think that's the really the big takeaway here is, you know, we saw through Federal Highway Administration data shows that 61% of the country's roads in fair to poor condition, which estimates a $231 billion a year to keep up the existing road network in acceptable repair. So that $231 billion figure is quite sizable. And it doesn't appear that states are the collective country is meeting that figure.
So what is the solution here? I guess you don't, that's not really your purview, but you know, do we need to be thinking more about rail or bus transportation or some sort of alternate form? Because it sounds like we're getting further and further behind on our highways and roads.
Sure. You know, and one takeaway that, you know, we're seeing is, you know, again, that percentage of spending on road repairs. We do see infrastructure being a, you know, on the campaign trail with the election year coming up in 2020. It's not just a presidential talking point. There are local elected officials at the city and state level that do have a lot of say in what's being spent on road repairs. So, you know, taking this into consideration, having the elected officials and folks running for office, having placing an importance on infrastructure and repairing existing roads, just something to look out for when you are voting in this next year. So looking at the elected officials, it could be responsible for improving the existing road conditions.
So we were number two. Number one kind of surprised me, not going to lie. Number one in your report was for the worst road infrastructure in the country was Rhode Island, which is, I think we have a county. I think Osage County is bigger than Rhode Island.
Right.
But this is all kind of figured out on a per capita basis. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, all of our ranking factors are, you know, a percentage of roads in poor condition, a cost per motorist, and a percentage of structurally deficient bridges. So that's a way to normalize, you know, a small state like Rhode Island compared to Oklahoma and then even compared to like Texas.
So who had the best roads? Who's at the bottom of the list, meaning they have the better roads like 50, 49, 48?
Yeah, it was Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida. Came in as the top three states for best road infrastructure.
Interesting. Sort of a southeastern trend there.
Yeah. And again, when you look at the top three worst compared to the top three best, the Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida have very low percentage of poor quality roads. And they also spend a high percentage on road repairs. So quite conversely to the top end, we see a lot of roads in poor conditions and a small percentage of spending on road repairs.
So seems like a fairly direct correlation there. I mean, there's always the whole chicken and the egg thing, but it sounds to me like there is a correlation between how much states are willing to spend on maintenance and repair and how good the roads are to drive on for folks.
Yep, absolutely. And I think we see that, you know, the more you're spending on road repairs, the higher percentage of roads or I guess the lower percentage of roads in poor condition. And then when that occurs, you see a lower cost per motorist. And then ultimately also, you know, the percentage of bridges structurally deficient.
Research analyst Alan Johnson. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.